Hello, everyone, and welcome again to another episode of Resilient Health Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Darren Ingles, and joining me on the podcast today is friend and colleague, Dr. Rika Galbraith. She is a medical doctor, family practice physician by training, as I understand. She is the author of Energize, as you can see in the background. And today we're going to talk about something I don't think we've really discussed on the podcast before, and we're going to talk a little bit about nutrigenomics. But Dr. Rika, I really appreciate you spending time with us today.
I'm so excited to share my wealth of knowledge around the field of nutrigenomics, nutrigenetics, whatever way you want to refer to it, because I think it really packs a punch, but you really have to know some of the kind of things to be cautious of, because it's more than just knowing it. It's knowing how to apply it.
You know, before we jump in that, I kind of like to hear your story. I'm always interested in how medical doctors, you know, bail on the conventional medical training, kind of come into our world of integrative medicine. You know, can you tell us a little bit about what happened that caused that shift for you?
Yeah. So when I was a little girl, I had three dreams. I wanted to become a doctor. I knew from a very early age. And the second dream was to get married and have my own children. And the third was really to cure everyone. And I know. And through my
lofty goal,
I know, through my health journey, I almost didn't actualize all those dreams. And it really kind of culminated where we had taken the celebratory trip. I was sitting poolside with my kids. We'd spent 8 years abroad working as expatriates. And I had finally overcome all these health challenges from infertility and Hashimoto's and endometriosis and had these kids very painstakingly. Finally, I had graduated residency, which seemed monumental at that time because I was so fatigued, falling asleep at rock concerts on dates. I always joke and say, can you imagine my love life? And thank God my husband put up with me and I was able to stay awake for more than one day. And I thought, wow, I finally made it. And as we touched down and had this beautiful trip planned and we were in the country of Sri Lanka, I thought, this is idyllic. Like, we've worked so hard to take a little break and enjoy because we were in that part of the world. And at the time, I felt so awful. And I had already done some labs and I was in liver failure. So my liver enzymes were 250 plus. And I really felt like, oh, okay, so this is how this ends. And all I could think about was, I'm going to leave these kids motherless. And I just finally arrived. And it was after, you know, when I was in traditional medicine, never being able to solve patients' issues with fatigue, one of the most common problems we see. I had no idea. I was fatigued. I had acclimated at a low level and I just kept plowing through because that's what we're trained to do. But I was really so profoundly fatigued that now that I have all this energy, if I ever get a glimpse of it, it's startling how bad it was. And you forget that when you reclaim it. And I just made that commitment. I had actually at that time, we were traveling back to the U.S. I was going to start my first functional medicine job. And I partnered with a physician who was seasoned to help me through because I had just only learned the introductory stuff. And with his help, I ended up reversing those elevated liver enzymes, which it took me over a decade to really understand what led to that. But thankfully, I didn't get their entertaining yet a fourth or fifth autoimmune disease in me. And they thought it was autoimmune hepatitis. And for the general people who don't know, if you're not on steroids, the mortality or like drug is high. It's 50% in 3 to 5 years if you're not on some agent that's going to suppress that inflammation. And it's been 10 years and I've never had to take a steroid and I've reclaimed my health. And now because of my journey, thousands of other people's journey. And I hope to do this by having these interviews and conversations with people like you or who I call our healthcare warriors or, you know, our functional medicine warriors.
Yeah. Well, I know your book, I think, came out October of last year, Energized. And we'll drop a link in the show notes so you guys can check it out. But one of the things, again, I know you talk about a lot of things, you know, we'll talk a little bit about the three Ds, because I think that's really the foundation of what you're teaching people. You know, maybe let's talk a little bit about that first, and then we'll get more into sort of the nutrigenomic part.
Over the last decade, I said, well, why am I getting results? Why are people flying during a pandemic to see me when there are so many practitioners that are in functional medicine? Why are other functional doctors seeing me? And it was like driven out of a passion to save myself so I could be there for my children, out of a passion of once you you know, or you start drinking out of the fire hose. You want to help everyone because you have different tools. And I said, what is this magical thing? And the 3Ds really centers around the first is diet and nutrients. And I've developed a whole way of, there's some things that are taught even in functional medicine that can harm someone. And for example, we put everyone on an elimination diet, or many of us do, but no one really talks about, let's get them away from being so restrictive. And so I developed a whole, I call it the task method to an abundant diet 365. Everyone should be eating abundance as far as nutrients and nourishing, not abundance as far as calories or how frequently they eat, right? And we start there, and that really segues into, you know, give you a perfect example. I had a woman who had no energy, had a diagnosis of a sleep disorder, benign hypersomnia, which I question because it's in that, are they just classifying her as a disorder? She ended up going to decrease her medications, eliminated all of her symptoms, and dropped 30 pounds. And that was just with diet and helping her identify key nutrients. And I thought, wow, that's only one step. And I caution people, like if it were just diet alone, all these diet books out there would help them. But it's typically you walk them through the next step, and you really need to that second D is digestion, and really talking about, we have so many catchphrases around it, and that's the microbiome. So optimizing it. And if you're not eating an appropriate diet, you'll never optimize the microbiome. And in fact, recently I was interviewed on a podcast in the iHeart radio station in New York City. So super fun. And the interviewer said, well, how does one optimize their microbiome if they're eating an American diet? And I just look at my face and I'm like, you can't. And I'm not going to help you override that. To a degree, you can, but you don't want to. It's difficult. Yeah, it's like the heart attack patient who then wakes up from his bypass surgery, and the first thing they feed him is, unfortunately, a whole meal full of carbohydrates, or worse, after their discharge, they go to McDonald's or something. You're just continuing to fuel that fire. And so, you know, that was, so when we, you know, I had a patient who had rheumatoid arthritis. She came to me for nutrigenetics. She had a gene mutation that led to recurrent miscarriages. She knew that this is an area that I loved and had become known for. And she got diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis 6 weeks before she saw me. And she had the good fortune of, she worked with a nutritionist to optimize the first D, and then we met and we were able to optimize her microbiome and then go on to detox. And she's one that I actually reverse engineered the nutrigenetics. And I'll keep referring to her because it was so fascinating what I found. So we identified a bacteria that was sitting there lurking in her microbiome, and it was triggering her immune system. We eradicated that. And then we went on to detox, and we made recommendations. It'd be simple. Every step again feeds in the next. So you have to be having daily bowel movements in that digestion. That's the second D. You have to be in the detox phase. The natural thing is getting the right nutrients from the first day to detox, getting protein in. I always say in digestion, you want to chew to renew. So chew your food so it's broken down, you absorb better. You want to rest and digest. So again, absorption of nutrients. You want to, and then in detox, you want to hydrate to rejuvenate. So you want to be hydrating and eliminating your sweat and urine. And I always tell people, I'm like, it's the only field where talking about poop is so glamorous, or I make it glamorous, acceptable, right? And we joke, and it just normalizes it. And so we got her through the three phases, and she was someone that we saw a couple times here. She lived abroad, so she had flown in to see us. And I didn't see her for 18 months. And I really felt like, oh gosh, she's coming back. What happened? And I hated to even ask, like, what if I didn't get her better? Why do we assume that, right? Because we hadn't heard. Actually, this case was good news, was actually good news. And the first statement out of her mouth was, oh, rheumatoid arthritis? I feel like I never had it. And so we then reverse engineered it by looking at her genetics. And I was able to identify what in each step helped her recover. And hopefully we'll share more of that as we dive deep into that. And I always say those first three Ds, that leads to hormone balance. A lot of people out there, if you're of the age where you might be entertaining hormone replacement therapy, if you don't identify and optimize those first steps, you're a prime candidate to A, not having the hormones work, or B, making them make you feel worse. hair thinning, acne, maybe you're putting weight more around the middle for a man. That's not desirable, not either for a woman. And so that first set of 3Ds, it lays the foundation, I tell people. And then once that foundation is laid, we go and we'll leverage your genetics. So that's our kind of our second level of treatment.
Diet, digestion, detoxification. Are you sure you didn't go to naturopathic school? I think we're talking the same language here.
Isn't it the same love language? And it's fine tuning within each one. So in the dietary piece, what your viewers may not know is when I was in medical school and residency, I moonlighted in a weight loss clinic. We did it all wrong. And now I learned how to do it all right. And using genetics, I was able to teach people how to introduce foods and determine without knowing their genes. And we do it in our weight loss program that we run on, you know, in addition to other services we provide. And we teach them like how much fat is necessary for you, how many carbs, why did you gain weight in menopause? So we're looking at various genes because, you know, some people, the keto diet maybe is appropriate for 20% of people for weight loss. And that's because everyone burns those fats at a different rate. And so if they're accumulating as calories, then you're not going to lose weight with keto. But if you chew through that fat, you'll definitely lose weight. And all of us have patients that are thin patients with memory loss. So one gentleman I treated who had Alzheimer's, in order to maintain his weight, we had him eating like a full cup of nuts, a full avocado a day, like tablespoons of olive oil at every meal and MCT. I mean, he was on an ungodly amount to be able to maintain. So he quickly metabolized and blew through, as saturated the good fats, but other people don't. And so I've learned how to teach people, like, maybe you don't need a full avocado like that patient did three times a day or however often he was eating. Maybe you need, it's a quarter is enough, and that's your serving size. So yeah, that's the beauty of kind of knowing it both ways, with and without genetics. Of course, I always like to know them, and we'll chat about some of the things we see and what gets people into trouble. But from a dietary standpoint, there are three genes. So there's the fat burning gene. And then there's one called AMY1, and that tells you how fast you metabolize carbohydrates. Most of us can figure that out. I knew that in my 20s. So I need lower amounts. And then especially if I'm not working out as much, so you're going to drop that, or I'm going to be eating more complex carbs and definitely no simple carbs. And then there's another gene that governs how fast you break down calories. And for that gene, it's your resting metabolic rate. So that explains, like, as you age, that already plummets. But if you already have a genetic mutation and don't do that, probably in your 40s, you're going to notice more weight gain than your neighbor or your best friend. And a lot of us, and I know it happened to me, is we were moving around so much, I had a subtle decline in exercise. Not bad. I mean, because I was lifelong, I worked out and was real diligent and trying to maintain it. There were periods of time, I think we all do this, right? Sometimes we're more in balance and sometimes things fall on the wayside. And I said, oh, and so that happened to me in my 40s. I'm like, oh, I became like every other patient, but doc, I didn't do anything different. I just packed down 15 pounds. And it's the genetics and learning how to leverage them really is what led to me be able to shed that weight. And so I share that with my patient, if that is a goal. And I would say, even if it's not about weight, I'm sure you see this in your clinic, is that 90%+ of the population has suboptimal blood sugars and insulin. Right. And they're lean. And so you apply some of these same principles to why is that? And I have my own theory. So we're looking at inflammation, and I think stress is not helping society, especially in the recent years.
Yeah, it seems, I think, the combination of modern society, like you said, stress, certainly quality of food, at least in the United States, I think plays a big role in that. Again, the same food here versus eating it in Europe, it's apples and oranges. I mean, you can't even really compare the food there. Probably it's less chemicals, less pesticides, more nutrient dense, maybe more likely to be organic. And I think even organic in the United States, I mean, I'll say it's not no pesticide. It might be low pesticide. So, I mean, how much of that's really feeding into what we're seeing as a whole? I mean, I can't remember what the percentage is of all the Americans that are metabolically unfit. I think it's like 75%. It's something really high like that.
Yeah, I heard it was over 90, but you're right. It's a huge portion. So it's more than half of the population. And I'm seeing it down into the teens. So I do have like my biggest demographic, obviously, is women. That's who tends to seek functional medicine, followed by the spouses of the women and the family members. And then we do see the kids. And that's historically kind of the two demographics. But I also have a high preponderance of the high level executives. And if I had a pinpoint, I'd say that cortisol response. And we can talk about some of the genetics with that as well. And the being stressed all the time is what I'm referring to. And the most common thing I hear is, oh, but I don't feel stress. And those, when they come in high performing, I always check, because then you can show them visually that you really need to adapt this, or it's going to take you out. And you're going to be the person who's fine until one day you're not. And it's like that straw that broke the camel's back, right?
You know, I've talked to a few other people. I've talked to Ben Lynch and Karen Ladowski and other people that do a lot in the genetic world. And I will admit, I am not an expert in this field at all. You know, I think the one question I ask everybody that I always wonder for myself, and I think a lot of people listening, you know, the average person has 10 million SNPs. This is part of being human. How do you piece together the ones? I mean, we don't always know whether the genes turn on or off just because you have, whether you're heterozygous or homozygous for any specific gene. So how do we know whether that gene is functioning or not?
That is a great question. So sometimes I'm going to do a little backup and just talk about epigenetics refers to us being able to turn on and off genes with diet right. and lifestyle. Genetics is not your fate. And to date, the studies are showing that you can modify it. So it doesn't matter if it's defective. And there's a lot of people who have the Alzheimer's gene, for example, and don't go on to have Alzheimer's. And what I look to is I always combine symptoms and labs with the genes to see what is actually manifesting. And there's whole fields that are already around where they measure metabolites, and they can measure some of the anti-aging testing I do. So we have the foundational program, we have the leveraging your genetics. And I say, I have my anti-aging program, which we call Live Long Well. And within that, they're actually able to measure methylation of genes, and they can tell you risks. And methylation is just turning on or off a gene. So you want to turn off the tumor producing genes, and you want to turn on the tumor suppressing genes. And it's a fine balance. And if I had to pick one thing, you can measure homocysteine. And I say, homocysteine governed by B12, folate, and other vitamins and minerals that drive that. And I want to keep that in a healthy range. Most of the experts out there are saying 6 to 8. That's where I like, not too low, because if you overmethylate, you can have unintended consequences. Not too high, that's where you're going to get the blood clotting risk, and your pathway is not running to shut that off. And that means that other pathways that are tied to methylation, or it's actually the methionine cycle, don't work. And that's detoxification, that's producing your brain chemicals. And so I use that just as a general marker. And I think we're going to get even stronger. I don't think we're quite yet there. And there, I think the closest is one of the longevity tests I do, and they look at methylation on actual genes to predict things. And so that's the closest I've seen. How about you? Have you heard anything else? I love learning from the people that I collaborate with, like on these interviews, and then we all take away something, right, and make our practices better and all of that.
Yeah, you know, I was talking with Bob Miller at a conference not long ago, and he's got a whole company where they do the testing and then they run it through software to try and help, I guess, almost kind of predict where there's going to be a pitfall in your genetics. And honestly, every time I listen to him, my head spins and I have a hard time following it. But, I've always kind of struggled with looking at these genetic profiles. And to be honest, I see a lot of practitioners that they do the 23andMe, they run it through Stratagene, whatever, Bob's software, and it spits out, okay, take this supplement, take that supplement. And I kind of see that as a misuse of genes. I see it as some practitioners as a way, honestly, to sell supplements. And I don't think that's the best use for patients. And again, we see sometimes people do well, sometimes they really tank when they take this, you know, now list of 20, 30 supplements that their doctor said you have to take because of your genetic profile. So I think, again, you've got to look at the clinical features of the person. In some cases, like I said, MTHFR is probably the easy one because we can measure homocysteine, and we've got labs like Doctor's Data that'll go through the whole methylation cycle, and we can see where there might be a deficit. But there's so many other genes that, as far as I know, we don't have at least a lab test that tells us whether that epigenetic expression has occurred. So for me, I look at them and go, well, you know, we just kind of have to use our best educated guess based on your clinical symptoms that it looks like this maybe isn't functioning the way it should. And maybe that means this is something you should take, or really maybe it's something you shouldn't take, I guess, depending on the gene.
Yeah, I love that. And I've kind of have a combination. So I did train with Ben Lynch, was the first one back 8 years ago. I've trained with Bob Miller. I use his software as well. I've looked at Ben's as well. I have two testing companies. I prefer one I really use for the high performers, where we want to optimize longevity. It's more palatable. It gives me things that are tangible. I'd love to, as we segue into the conversation, talk about that. And then Bob's I use with my chronically sick patient. And there is a pattern I've recognized in people who have symptoms earlier, and myself included. And I'd love to share that with your listeners.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
I always look at, and you say, where do you start? And I say, if someone's coming in, they're super sick, I'm always looking at detoxification and how do they clear things. And so for the for myself, and the pattern I've noticed is glutathione, your listeners may know, is a super potent, it's our major antioxidant. It's important in that we can recycle it, keep using it, like a rechargeable battery, right? And some people have trouble making it, some people have trouble recycling it, but important for not only breaking down toxins, but also breaking down hormones, so estrogen. And that was one of my things. And I've noticed one of the companies I use, there's three that they'll look at: GSTM1, GSTP1, and GSTP1. And the first two I reference, you can have zero copies. And I've been testing now, not quite a decade, but close, and almost consistently, the people that are sickest have zero copies of those first two genes.
Oh, interesting.
Myself included, meaning that we're not going to be able to manufacture the glutathione. And glutathione is important in breaking down, it finalizing the breakdown product of when we're exposed to toxins. So when free radicals get broken down. And so and those of us who have this, and here's how I first picked up on glutathione was an issue. That's the whole reason why I got into functional medicine. I read an article. I said, oh my gosh, this describes every fatigue patient. What if this is the answer? Had no idea it applied to me. I was at my first functional medicine conference, and the vendor I happened upon knew I was flying all the way back to the Middle East from LA. So, oh, you must be so excited to see your kids, because they were quite young at that time. Said, I am, but I am not looking forward to the jet lag. In my 40s, it's gone from 1 week to 2 to 3 to almost 4 weeks, where I'm almost dysfunctional. I mean, that's how I was really just hanging on to an edge, right? And he says, here, take this glutathione. And, you know, I don't know the pathophysiology. I didn't know the genetics. So I took it the day he gave it to me. And for 3 days into my return, and my fatigue, that jet lag resolved after 3 or 4 days. And I thought, wow. So I stayed on it. And that was my thing. I should have stayed on it at a low level. And so that's what I tell people. Is that something, we're going to get your levels up until you feel better, and then you have your option. You may need to continue a dose a few times a week, a dose every day. I probably wouldn't go to twice daily. I'm usually on a dose a day. And when you're exposed to stressors, so it could be an infection. So the recent infection that swarmed the world, or you can be exposed to the stress of flying, not only from exposure to benzene, but the ionizing radiation, the disruption in sleep. And so that's how I utilize that, is to gauge, okay, if they're chronically sick, how are we going to support them? If they're not sick, do we need to do support? And we check levels, and we do it sensibly, because, as you know, when you trained as a naturopath and myself, is there's always upstream and downstream effects. So if you give something, you can unintentionally shut things off. So real careful. So it's not a blanket statement. And we decide, I just saw a young gentleman yesterday, and he's so passionate. We had resolved his, he had ADHD symptoms, high anxiety. And he jumped on the bandwagon, started learning, and he really wanted this consult because he was starting to learn more and more and more. And he's now in the fitness space. And I was talking to him, and I'm like, you know, you said, where do you supplement? And he ironically was breaking down his dopamine so quick. So he's going to, you know, he's going to be that couch potato. So he's not lingering to make him motivated. But at the current moment, he was functioning. I said, how do you naturally supply and make dopamine? So we talked about natural strategies. I said, so if you get into an exam time and you're stressed, you know, prioritize your protein so you can break it down to tyrosine, prioritize these vitamins and minerals. And then if you're struggling, maybe during exams week, you're doing a little bit of tyrosine just during that week. You don't want to give too much of anything. But, you know, if someone comes in and they're overwhelmingly floored by their symptoms, maybe I'll support them a little more. And so it's nuanced. It's not something, and I always say caution to the wind. So there are some biohackers that are, I love when people can spread great information, but when they don't put in that caveat is it's not a one size fits all and someone gets into trouble. Because we all know that if you over methylate someone with folate, you can make them suicidal and ragey. And even Ben Lynch speaks about this very openly, is that start it. And when you feel good, stop. That's his methodology. I have a slightly different approach, but I'm always cognizant of how much I'm replacing, when and for how long.
I think most of us have found out the hard way that we can over prescribe very well-intended substances that should, at least at the right dose, correct or at least overcome that deficit. And we overshoot the mark a little bit and the patient calls up and, what did you do to me? Do you know how much folinic acid you gave me? I'm like, okay, I'm sorry, you know, my mea culpa, my bad. So, you know, we call it practice for a reason. Like, you know, we're always learning, and, you know, you and I both recognize how individual every person is, and there is no one size fits all. And if that's the one take home message I really want to hit with folks is that, you know, you're unique, you're different, your physiology, your chemistry is so different than the person next to you that there's never a one size fits all approach to any kind of chronic medical condition.
Yeah. And when I'd love to share another thing that kind of came to light, that every time I learn something, it completely changes how I do it so I can support people better. Right. And, you know, early in the days, I would just see people and I would tell them what they need to do, but then we didn't have them on board and they wouldn't follow through and they wouldn't get better and they'd blame the system or that it didn't work. The approach didn't work. Now we're so dialed in that it works because we tell them exactly when we're going to see them, exactly what we're going to do for their needs. And with my high performers, I got into this where I could recover them very quickly. And that's my whole hero's journey is energy. And a lot of that is their adrenals are tanked. The first thing I noticed was, hey, they don't actualize that symptom of being burnt out until it's way too late. And so with them, I had an executive who burned out. We got him from disabled on the couch for 18 months to launching his consulting business in 12 weeks. And that's me and my coaches and the team and the approach. Sadly, we tell people, okay, I'm like the dentist. You can't get away with not seeing me. I want you to, in between times, definitely be empowered to continue to make great choices, be able to rein it in. But I want to track, because what you don't test, you don't know. And I've seen this time and time again from how we produce energy, people who feel seemingly well, and you do a little test and you're like, oh, your mitochondria are tanked. You're like a month away from, and then you fix it. And they're like, oh, wow, I feel better. I'm like, well, we identified it before it became a problem. So for my high performers, we introduce a lot of different modalities to teach stress resilience. And the second thing I did is they needed proof. So we showed them the proof. Here's your adrenals, where you're at. I had a business owner that the cortisol level was just off the charts every time of day, had terrible exercise recovery. And as we looked through it and then we looked at the genetics, there are some people that are genetically wired not to break down the fight or flight chemicals or even cortisol. So it lingers. And if they don't do it well at all, that also explains why some people, like, think of, if you think about anyone who's fought in combat, you have the people who return and they might be traumatized for sure, right? They're changed, but they function. And then you have the other vein. They're not only having nightmares, but they just can't function. And those are the ones that cannot recover after that stress response. And if I see that, then we have a serious conversation. I want to give you resilience. And so I'll add in an herb to say, hey, this is where I need you to be at now till you're recovered. And this is what I want to have you consider long-term along with the diet and lifestyle. So it's like really helped me change, like, because this one woman took a little while to identify, and people don't want to hear, oh, you're just burnt out. And it's just a component, and it's all the things that led to it. There's so many things. It's not just burning the candle. And she's just felt amazing, better and better and better. And I said, I think this is your ticket. And in her instance, that stress response, we found a florid level of all these past viral issues. And I'm like, every time you get into that high stress state, you're probably reactivating all these viruses. And then that's why you feel even worse. And so it all made sense. And so we have a whole, and you know, I've been using peptides here and there. And so we're supporting her immune function with that. And we have a whole strategy. And she was just like, wow, I just feel so relieved that I have an answer. And now going forward, I'm never going to go back. And so that's the beauty of like when you see these and you combine how she was feeling and what you were doing. But the more and more I know, it like really helped me. And that's why I say, that's why my execs, we definitely look at the genetics piece. I don't want them to, you know, a lot of them, I can't tell you how many have retired early. They just are so flat out fatigued, or it worse is when they crash and burn, right? And can't work. So.
What kind of pattern are you seeing in the genetics with the adrenal dysfunction? Is it COMT? Is it other specific genes?
It's a combination. So COMT, and there's one, and I'm blanking on the name, you asked me too quickly, on that breaks down the norepinephrine and epinephrine. And ironically, some of these are tied to whether you'll tolerate certain psychiatric medications for depression, right, too. And why did I blank on that name? But yeah, it's a combination of the two. And this particular company kind of gives you, I look at it, if they're mutated, I say, hey, we should probably, especially if they're doubly mutated, we should support this diet and lifestyle always. When you're feeling unwell, we're going to reach in and do some sort of herbal adrenal support. And then long-term, what's our answer? What do we need to be doing? And how good or and diligent are you going to be about it? But for this woman, she was off the charts, and then we've brought her down, but she's still high normal. And she actually sold her business, and she's still really high throughout the day, feeling much better, but she's at risk for just escalating. And over time, as you know, then they'll flatline, and we don't want her to do that.
So what labs are you using to test your folks?
For genetics or just the special?
For genetics, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I really like two. So I do like Bob Miller's. When they come in and they're really chronically ill, and with Bob's, I say caution to the wind. He's got 19,000 genes and you don't use them all. And I strategically will look at he works from the bottom up and he's got this whole protocol. I look at the things that are prominent in their life. So if it's mold, it's various detox genes, it's mast cell and histamine and oxalates, all the things that get them into trouble, and we work through it. For the high performers, I do like the DNA company. Just based on, they give me the most information that is palatable, that you can actually come up with a game plan. And most of it's like, for example, let me tell you about this one. So a lot of the genes that govern vitamins and minerals, so vitamin D, vitamin C, I say, who cares? We just are going to optimize your level. So if you need 10,000, you need 10,000. We can do that without the genes, right? Yeah. But for vitamin A, the BCMO1 gene tells us if you can activate beta carotene out of the diet into retinal palmitate. And kids, so if you're a parent of children, if you fed your kid a bunch of orange vegetables, carrots, or your sweet potatoes, and they accumulated that orange around their nose, they probably aren't doing that conversion. And they're the ones that are going to come in, and they might have the bumps on their arms. We call that seborrheic keratosis. Right. And super important for eye health, and it's an antioxidant. And so right away in those folks, why not give them the active form? It's just a no-brainer. So those are like simple things you can do. You don't even have to, minus if someone is childbearing and potentially pregnant, never want to go over 5,000 of vitamin A in combined per day. So we always throw caution to the wind. And you can get toxicity because it's fat soluble. So I've had people taking large doses, and maybe when you're acutely ill for a short time, I'll sometimes do 3 days of a higher dose, but no more, because you don't want to make someone worse. Right. I did have someone come in. She was supplementing, I don't know, 20,000-25,000 for a period of time. And she ended up having, oddly enough, she was having panic attacks and everything. And, is a very unusual thing. I'm like, maybe that's why you shouldn't just be, you know, other than the standard doses, you should be very cautious with any of the vitamins that are fat soluble. So, and that's, I always say the ADEK, ADEK.
So is the lab, is it the Intellex DNA that you're using, Sharon Hausman's, or a different one?
It's DNA company.
It's called DNA Company.
Yeah, it's called DNA Company. Intellects, I've looked into. I'm really intrigued by estrogen receptor one now. And Bob Miller's, you can search up the RSID number. He does report it. It's not in his pathway pyramid, but you can find it. Because it really can explain why those of us, if you have mutations in that receptor, why these women, that's me included, go on to have endometriosis, why we tend to be sicker with COVID, why postmenopausally you probably could benefit from really balancing the estrogen and progesterone. And so I had a young lady we balanced and we took her through the things. I always say test, don't guess. And it was so ironic. In her 20s and lots of symptoms from depression to terrible PMS and acne. And we got her better and better and better. And she was like, wow, I can't believe how good I feel. And a lot of that was symptom based. And I said, hey, I want to explore this gene in you. And so we're looking at it because I need to know, does she need to be on hormones? And when we did her toxin testing, she was high, you guessed it, in all the toxins that act like estrogen in her body. And that was despite recently, say the past year or so, eliminating some of those. So they can accumulate. And so she was so relieved. And I'm like, we're on the right path. We just got to add a couple things to really help lower that burden so that you don't continue, you don't go on to have infertility like you did, or you don't go on, you know, to develop. I had migraines. I had vision losing migraines from that imbalance in the estrogen and progesterone. And that's scary. I thought I was having a stroke. I was pregnant with my second child, but yeah. So hopefully these are all helpful. These little tips are very helpful to your listeners.
Well, I just think it's so cool. I mean, we've evolved at a point in our technology where we can measure these things. Again, I don't, like I said, like you said, we're not quite at the point where it's complete translation to what we see on paper, to what we see clinically. But, you know, this is where we use our best clinical judgment based on the type of symptoms you've been experiencing, how long, what we see on paper. And again, we can kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together to figure out often these very complex levels of illness. So it's, I don't know, it's an exciting time in medicine, I think.
Yeah. Do you have time for just a 2-minute case on someone?
Please, where of course, yes.
Symptoms and genes were most helpful in this person. Same thing, woman with PMS. And I always say that what causes you to have PMS in your 20s is what leads to you having a horrible perimenopausal period from 40 to 50. You're going to be that person that has that 10 years of potentially not doing well. And then you're not going to see it. And I always say, put the pause in perimenopause so I can get you to sail through menopause. That's my motto. And we treated her based on what I was hearing on the, especially when someone's not near perimenopause, so well under 40. Sadly, the symptoms all become earlier because it's still estrogen dominant. Right. Listen to her symptoms. We targeted an approach. And I always tell people, people always ask me, should I wait till my labs are back? I'm like, I've been doing this for 10 years and I'm going to select the key things. They're going to move the needle for you in the next 4 to 6 weeks so that you have the resilience to do all the other steps. Cause it's not a 3D approach. I have 9 right. steps. I don't tell people that there's 9. Okay. And if I told them it was 9, they'd be like, they get scared off and we kind of do it subtly. And she was feeling amazing month one. We noted some lab abnormality, added something specific to her. And when I looked at her Dutch testing, it looked like she did not need support of her estrogen in the way she broke it down at all. She looked like she was normal. Then the following month, but I kept her on that because she was feeling good on what I had outlined. I'm like, this is really puzzling. Her metabolites look great. We looked at her genetics and sure enough, she wasn't converting enough to the good estrogen, converting a lot to the bad estrogen. And it was, I'm like, this is why everything I put her on worked. And so we had that conversation. So I always look at it both ways. The more information I have and doing a combined approach of, hey, she got better on this approach, even though her lab says she didn't need it. And I kind of had reverse engineered what her genetics actually said. I said, you're going to be someone that, and she really desperately did not want to go on progesterone. And because she's 20, so she says, I don't want to do that now. Now, will she need it later? Possibly. So there's going to be a point she may need it to support that, but always diet, lifestyle, then support the genes or presumptive genes based on what you're hearing on history. Try to confirm it with lab, knowing that sometimes the lab doesn't, you know, points to the opposite. So you really got to It's like an art, right? And you've seen that in your practice too. So
sadly, makes life more difficult. It'd be nice if everyone just reacted the same way to everything we gave them, but that's just not the way it is. And again, I think you've pretty well explained that, you know, genetics is a big part of why, you know, we are so unique in our individual expression of different things. Well, I mean, this has been, you know, fascinating. Again, it's always cool to talk to people who know more than I do about something and learn more about how genetics play a role into your diet, your nutrition. And I love that you start with these basic foundational things. You know, again, if you're not eating well, if you're not digesting your food, if you're not detoxifying, everything else is kind of doesn't work the way it's supposed to. So it's just so cool that you've explained it again, I think, as a naturopath would do it. So the book is Energized. We'll drop a link for that. I know you also have a program. We didn't talk about this, but I want to mention your She Reset program. Is that available yet?
It is right now. We're in a group launch phase. So we're running it. We offer that on the back end in a one-on-one setting with my health coach. And that's we leverage that first D, and that's how I reverse engineered the weight loss. So people, you know, can feel free to reach out if that's something that they're interested in. It really leverages and gets a lot of, it really takes care of a lot of the first initial steps. I'd say if you do that, really got to do the other steps too, but it packs a punch, and so much so that we include it in all of our programs. It's just an add-on. We include it because we want everyone to get the results that they deserve. And I love what you said, just to close up with this, is that these other, so we have fancy things in our practice. So we've got the genetics, we've got hormone replacement. I even am doing anti-aging strategies with peptides. They all work better if you're optimized with the foundational. So it's not, oh, I'm going to get on, if you're a male on testosterone, all of a sudden you're going to feel better. You may start to improve, but it may not work like you want to. And if you have no response or an unintended, you have to say, all right, I didn't take all the right steps to give me the results that I should have gotten.
Well, Dr. Reika, again, I'm always grateful for anyone who comes on the show, and I appreciate you spending time with us today.
Thank you for having me, Darren. It's been a pleasure.